Turn to Proverbs 5 and verse 10. Proverbs 5:10 says, "Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger." So this is a continuation from the two reasons that Solomon had given for the commandment that he gave in verse 8. In verse 8, he said, "Remove thy way far from her," speaking of the strange woman, "and come not nigh the door of her house." In verse 9, he gives two reasons, "Lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel." Now in verse 10, he gives another reason, or another two, if you want to split them up separately. So he is, like I said in the previous verse, God's commandment is sufficient for us to obey, but now Solomon is just piling on the reasons why it's so important to obey this particular commandment, because it will totally ruin your life, every aspect of it, if you go into a strange woman. So let's look at the first part of that. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth. So removing himself from the strange woman and not going near her house will prevent a man from losing his wealth and his livelihood, which is what this verse is teaching us. If you remember the definition of lest, it is used as a negative particle of intention or purpose, introducing a clause expressive of something to be prevented or guarded against. So when he says, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, he's saying to prevent or guard against strangers being filled with thy wealth, remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house. This will prevent strangers being filled with thy wealth. So if a man gets involved with a strange woman, a stranger will end up with his wealth. So just remember that. You get involved with a strange woman, and a strange man is going to end up with all your stuff. A stranger is one who belongs to another country, a foreigner, chiefly, now exclusively, one who resides in or comes to a country to which he is a foreigner, an alien. That's a primary definition. Now, I don't think Solomon's necessarily referring to somebody from another nation, necessarily. This definition goes on to say that the first one is somewhat rare, and recent examples show a mixture of number 2 and 4. And when we look at number 2, a stranger is one who is not a native of, or who has not long resided in a country, town, or place, chiefly a newcomer, one who has not yet become well acquainted with the place, or one who is not yet well known. And this fits very well with what Solomon's talking here about, a stranger being filled with thy wealth. Wealth is prosperity, consisting in abundance of possessions, worldly goods, valuable possessions, especially in great abundance, riches, or affluence. So in other words, the man who commits adultery with a strange woman will lose his possessions and riches to a man whom he doesn't even know yet. Some stranger that comes in and just picks up where he left off. He's going to lose it all to him. And this is part of the judgment of God for whoredom. We're told in Proverbs 13 and verse 22, just in general, this could apply to the whoremonger, or it could apply to any number of sinners, but in general, we're told Proverbs 13, 22, "A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just." So yes, if you sin, and you work hard and acquire a lot of wealth, God says, okay, now I'm going to take that from you, and I'm going to give it to somebody else. That's how it works. And this is one of God's punishments for sin in general. Let's look at a couple of verses here. First of all, Job 27, 16 through 17. Because of the shame and losing the honor and all those things, that's bad enough. But then losing everything, or at least half of everything you've worked for your whole life, that's really a kick in the pants. Job 27, 16 through 17. It says, "Though he heap up silver as the dust, and prepare raiment as the clay, he may prepare it, but the just shall put it on, and the innocent shall divide the silver." And Job was right on there. You can heap it up, you can get all kinds of possessions and clothes and nice things and prepare it, but guess what? Somebody else is going to end up enjoying it if you're a sinner. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 2:26. Ecclesiastes 2:26. It says, "For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit." I'll give you a couple of examples, or at least, yeah, I'll give you two. I'll give you two examples of this very thing here in just a moment. So yeah, he heaps it up, and God gives it to somebody else that's good before him. And this is how God punishes greedy people. Proverbs 28 and verse 8. It says, "He that by usury," which is charging interest, "he that by usury and unjust gain increaseth his substance, he shall gather it for him that will pity the poor." Yeah, you may gain a lot by ripping people off and charging them way too much interest whenever they're poor and they're in desperate straits. Yeah, you'll heap it up, and then God will give it to somebody else. That's how it works. "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he reap also." And I'll give you a couple of examples of this. The example of Haman. You remember that wicked man back in the book of Esther? Esther 8, 1 through 2. Haman tried to kill the Jew named Mordecai because Mordecai would not bow down to him. And you remember the story, and through an interesting chain of events, Haman ends up being hanged on the gallows that he made for Mordecai, and then all of Haman's stuff ends up being given to Mordecai. The wealth of the sinners laid up for the just. Esther 8, verses 1 through 2. It says, "On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther the queen, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai, and Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman." So everything that Haman had, Mordecai came into possession of. It just shows you that it always pays to do the right thing. Mordecai could have just bowed down like all the rest of those guys, but he wouldn't. He just wouldn't do it. He was going to do the right thing, just like the early Christians in Rome. If they'd have just bowed down to Zeus, burned some incense to Jupiter, they'd have been fine. The Romans didn't even care. You go ahead and worship Jesus. Just bow down to Zeus and Jupiter and the other gods, and bow down to Caesar, and you'd be fine. And they said, nope. And they died, and they burned at the stake. But guess what? Their reward is in heaven, and their reward will come in the new earth. They'll be blessed for it. And then you remember back in Exodus, whenever the Lord delivered the Israelites from Egypt, Egypt was a wealthy place, and the Lord took their wealth and gave it to the Jews as he took them out of the land. He says there in Exodus 3, 21 through 22, he says, "And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and it shall come to pass that when ye go, ye shall not go empty." They were slaves. I mean, slaves don't own much of anything. You know, maybe the clothes on your back if you're lucky. "But every woman shall borrow," I think you should put borrow there in quotes, "but every woman shall borrow of her neighbor and of her that sojourneth in her house jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment, and ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and ye shall spoil the Egyptians." That might seem a little bit unethical, but you know what? If God tells you to do it, do it. The wealth of the sinners laid up for the just. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. God owned all those jewels, and if he wants to take them from some sinner and give it to some just person, then he can do that. Now, I don't want to see any of you walking around with some nice jewels saying, "Well, I borrowed them from my neighbor," because, you know, biblical precedent, after all, the things that are written aforetime are written for my learning. You know, so that's a little different. You got to get a direct commandment from the Lord to do something like that. But so how will strangers be filled with thy wealth? Well, the whoremonger will be taken to divorce court and sued for half of his wealth. That's how it happens today, anyway. I don't know how it happened back then. He was probably killed if somebody got all of his stuff, right? He'd be stoned. Today, it still holds true. Strangers will be filled with thy wealth, at least half of it. You know, well, Jeff Bezos didn't commit adultery, but, you know, the owner of Amazon, he got a divorce here a few years ago, and his wife got like $50 billion. And now he's worth 200. I mean, he made that up and then some. But yeah, $50 billion he lost in that case. But if you got 50 billion, you got 100 billion, who cares? I mean, not like you'd miss 50 anyway. But for the average Joe, you know, when you don't have an extra 50 laying around, you're going to be in big trouble if you get half of everything you have taken from you. His wealth will then end up being the property of his ex-wife's new husband, right? Because he pays her out, and then some other guy comes in and marries her, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. That guy gets to just walk right into all her former husband's wealth. And this is why it says there in Job 31 and verse 12 that adultery will root out all a man's increase. Job 31 and verse 12. We just read this a minute ago, but I'll read just this one verse to you again. He's speaking of adultery that he was talking about there earlier. And he says, "For it is a fire that consumeth to destruction and would root out all mine increase, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth." And then the second half of the verse, "And thy labors be in the house of a stranger." Now, labor is exertion of the faculties of the body or mind, especially when painful or compulsory, bodily or mental toil. So it's work that you do with your head or with your hands, as we know. And the result of labor is money, which is used to purchase goods. So ultimately, your labor ends up in goods or services that you can enjoy. And the goods that were acquired by the labor of the adulterer will end up in the house of the man whom his ex-wife marries. His labor will be in the house of a stranger. Let me just give you an example of this. You remember the Canaanites? The Lord took Israel out of Egypt, and he was going to give them the land of Canaan. And the Canaanites were losing their land for, among other things, sexual sin. And this resulted in their labor being inherited by the Israelites, who were strangers in their land. "Lest thy labor be in the house of a stranger." Let me just show you that sexual sins like adultery were reasons why these heathen were being cast out of the land. Leviticus 20 and verse 23. So in verse 23, he tells us that they're being cast out for these abominations. He says, "And ye shall not walk in the manners of the nation, which I cast out before you, for they committed all these things, and therefore I abhorred them." And all these things are listed in verses 10 through 21. I'm not going to read those, but they include verse 10, adultery, verse 11, lying with your father's wife, verse 12, lying with a daughter-in-law, verse 13, sodomy, verse 14, lying with a mother-in-law, verse 15, bestiality, verse 17, incest, and, you know, all kinds of nasty, incestuous, adultery-type sins. And it was for that reason that they were cast out of the land. The Israelites inherited their land and their labor. It says specifically their labor in Psalm 105 and verse 44. The labor of the Canaanites ended up being in the house of the Israelites. Psalm 105, 44. It says, "And gave them the lands of the heathen, and they inherited the labor of the people." That was the Jews, the Canaanites, land and labor. Now, not only will the fruits of past labor be in the house of a stranger, but the fruits of present and future labor can as well. And this happens by a thing called alimony, when the judge orders alimony payments to be made by the adulterer to his wife for a period of time after their divorce. And I don't know how all this works technically. I don't know if you can be paying alimony after your ex-wife remarries or not. But if that's the case, and maybe it is, I don't know, it doesn't work that way. Okay. Well, nevertheless, your future labor, until your wife remarries, gets paid out into alimony payments to her, which ends up in the house of the stranger that she marries later on. So your labor does eventually end up in the house of a stranger. This can also happen if the fornicator impregnates the strange woman and has to pay child support for the next 18 years, which could end up in the house of her new husband or boyfriend, even. His labor will be in the house of a stranger for the next 18 years because of his foolishness. So the strange woman, as it says in Proverbs 6 and verse 26, can bring a man to poverty. Proverbs 6, 26. It says, "For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life." I remember my friends in Cincinnati, whenever they were teaching their kids, they were reading them the Proverbs when they were wee little and teaching them those, and Noah thought it said, "by means of a whorish woman." Like she had a really long face or something, you know. "But by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread," which if you're brought to a piece of bread, it pretty much means you don't have much left, right? Your labor is now in the house of a stranger. "So men, beware. If you go into the strange woman, you will end up giving your honor unto others, your years to the cruel. Your wealth will be in a stranger's house, and so will your labor." It's a dreadful thing, so we all want to be very careful and guard our hearts.